Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the TES International Podcast with me, Dan Worth. Today's guest is Dr. Stefan Sommer, the Director General of MISC Schools in Saudi Arabia, who joins us to discuss the school's integrated leadership curriculum that aims to give all students in the school, at all ages, the opportunity to learn leadership skills and attributes, ranging from the practical to the philosophical, to help create the next generation of future leaders for the country and beyond. He explains how this has been done through both direct lessons on core leadership skills, through to teachers subtly weaving in key ideas and concepts into everyday lessons, such as maths. He also outlines the work done to help staff develop the skills to do this, and how the school plans to share the learnings from this work in the future to help other schools implement similar ideas around the world. All this and lots more on the TES International Podcast. Hi, Dr. Sommer. Welcome to the TES International Podcast. Really great to chat with you. I think we're going to have a fascinating conversation about leadership and can you teach leadership? How do you teach leadership to students? Really interesting stuff. I think something that a lot of our leaders will be very interested in, maybe looking at themselves, doing various things, but it sounds like you're really sort of making it a central focus of what you're doing. Before we go into that though, can you just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, your role now, how you came to be where you are, to help reset the scene for what we're going to go on to discuss?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. And it's a great pleasure to be here. Just a few things about myself. I'm Dr. Stefan Sommer. I'm the Director General at MISC Schools in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. This is the fifth headship I have. I previously was a head at the British School in the Netherlands, the headmaster of the British School of Paris, the Director General of Collège Champité in Switzerland. That's a bilingual English-French school in Romandie, which is the French-speaking part of Switzerland. And then I was the principal of Doha College. And since 2022, I'm the Director General here at MISC Schools, which is the Crown Prince of Schools, quite a prestigious establishment. We have a brand new campus, which is quite extraordinary in size, but also in its appointments. Really, it rivals anything else that I've ever seen in the world. And then I was the Vice Chairman of COBIS, the Council of British International Schools.
Excellent. Well, very well-travelled man, clearly, and some good sort of destinations there. So, but obviously very interesting that you ended up where you are now. Let's talk a bit about this. I mean, there's probably lots of things you're doing in your school we could talk about. Well, we're going to sort of focus on one thing to keep it sort of focused. Is this integrated leadership curriculum. So again, why don't you tell us a bit about that in the round? Where did that come from? What's the sort of intent there? And then we'll go into some of the specifics from that.
Well, it's a long-standing interest of mine, the notion of leadership and how to educate leaders and shape leaders. We are here, just a bit of background there. We're here at High Performance Learning School, which, there's about 80 of us around the world. Doha College was as well. And this one, MISC Schools, is now the first and only High Performance Learning School in Saudi Arabia. The reason why I'm saying that is the concept of high performance learning is that all students can be high performers. And there's a whole way that I don't want to go into here of how to do that. And the 80-odd schools that are high performance learning schools have proven that this is the case. And I've always thought that that's actually also the case for leadership. And there is such a thing as a natural leaders, and you can read books about them, and they've all been described very well. But what hasn't really been thought about is how one might create them in schools. And so when I came here to MISC, and our vision and mission were formulated by our founder, by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and we are really here to shape and educate leaders for Saudi. Leaders of companies, profit-making, non-profit-making organizations, but also leaders in the spirit of Saudi, outside Saudi, in the WHO, in UNESCO, in all these organizations and things. So I had to actually think very deeply about leadership, even more so than I had done before, because having a bolt-on course on making sure that all students do as part of what they do here, a leadership course, wouldn't quite cut the edge, I thought, because we wouldn't distinguish ourselves precisely enough from others, because there are hundreds of schools that do leadership. So I came up with the idea that I could model the leadership education on what high performance learning is, assuming that anyone can be a high performing leader. There must be ways of shaping one. And I took the same approach as was taken when high performance learning came into being. And that is let's look at the best performing leaders and what is that they do. Now, obviously, I haven't done 30 years of empirical research as Deborah Eyre did for high performance learning, but I just sort of worked on my own my own background, the leadership literature that I've read, and also the leaders, and there are plenty of them, that I've worked very closely with, leaders that have impressed me and that I've molded myself on. And I came to the conclusion that leadership is actually three things. That yes, leadership is a skill, and with Duke of Edinburgh and Model Adam Bleek and Model United Nations and all these things, head boys, head girls, we do all of these things, we can train those skills. But that's only the skill. I then thought leadership is also an academic discipline, which is proven by two things. It has a past, because a good leader was defined differently in 1960 from what it is now. Mm. So, and therefore we can assume that a good leader in 2050 will have to have different skills from a good leader now. So that proves that there is an academic discipline to it, which obviously has an evolution. And thirdly, and most importantly, I thought, well, actually leadership is also a behavior type. And a behavior type is actually the most complex bit about leadership, because that is what defines when you hear the term natural leader. They do things in the way they go about anything they do, not only leading, but about stuff they go about doing, is defined by that behavior type. And that takes a longer period to inculcate. So when I then researched in some detail the Chartered Management Institute courses of leadership, I found that maybe these behavior types, and these behavior types were not spelled out, but clearly in the shape of adjective, were clearly described. And I thought, well, if we were able to extract those quintessential behavior type related leadership behaviors and juxtapose those against activities that naturally create those behavior types, we could weave them into the curriculum. And that's what we've done. So I asked IDG, the Inspirational Development Group, who specialized on leadership, to help me, because obviously all of this takes quite some time to do. And alongside running a school, which is quite complex and quite high level, is quite difficult. So I asked them to help me with that. And they were intrigued by the idea, but latched onto it straight away because they thought, well, this could have legs, actually. And they did. So we now have an integrated leadership program whereby whether your children are learning maths, science, Arabic, Islamic studies, or English, whatever it is, economics, or indeed homeroom in primary, they are learning these quintessential leadership behaviors by activities that they're doing. Be very simple things of sharing, convincing, accepting a different point of view. It's all these kind of things, which natural leaders do quite naturally. But I always work in the assumption I've been in education for long enough and I've led enough schools to know that what you don't teach children, you can't assume that they will just pick up. By some will, but those who will also tend to see that a lot in their parents and in their relatives. And that's why you think in a school they've picked it up by osmosis, but actually in reality they haven't. So it needs to be actively taught. So that's what we're doing now here throughout the curriculum from kindergarten. So that's from 3-year-olds up until grade 12, which is then in the British system, year 13, up to the age of 18. And that works really well. And what has been almost instantaneous is the change that parents saw in their children. The way they go about this. That has been your type clearly translated in how they do things at home too. But on top of that, don't get me wrong, we're also doing the outreach things. We're doing outdoor pursuit things, Duke of Edinburgh. We're doing Oman and Saudi outward bound activities. We have had girls and had boys and all of these kind of things that many schools do as well.
Yeah.
And because that trains the other things, which of course leadership as a skill still needs to be trained. That's a different thing altogether. And the package altogether will then, and that's my assumption, will then produce a something like the natural leaders.
Yeah.
But to prove that, we have also engaged a researcher who is doing some empirical research to back this up. And we've got a control group as well, where there's another school that also teach leadership but a different way. And we will then have the comparisons so that the data that we have will then be validated.
Well, that sounds very interesting, and appreciate the sort of the depth of the insight there, because it really has sort of explained it really nicely. There were lots of things you said there that did sort of spark questions, so I'm going to try and remember as many as I can. And I thought it was very interesting what you said about the idea of leadership being an academic discipline, and how a leader in the 60s, and you could go back way back to the 1800s, really, if you want, can you just keep going through that timeline? And like you say, 2050, a leader, what skills will they need to have? Well, we probably know some of them, and we probably don't know the other half, you know.
Absolutely. But,
on the sort of maybe more practical element then, you talked about, you know, it's from sort of 3 to 18, and the sort of the idea that you can teach these things, and you've got to sort of remember they're not going to be picked up by osmosis, which I think is a very good point. Probably true of any sector, really. But does that mean then, are there dedicated lessons on this? Is it like, you know, this is now a lesson on leadership, or is it that every teacher is now kind of required to sort of weave in leadership components to their classes? Is it a bit of both? How do you actually do the active element of it?
Well, it is woven into the teaching program. So the teaching activities, every lesson has, of course, a lesson starter. People do it differently, of course. And then there will be an instructional piece of the kind of content, be it maths or English, whatever it is that you are delivering. And then there's the practicing bit, which is the activities. And those activities could be English activities, could be maths activities, could be physics activities, are then this kind of leadership activities. Not all of them, but some of them. And to help the teachers, because obviously we have to train the teachers on the job, we have leadership coaches who work with them on those. But that only really is done for about half a year. And for new teachers who are coming in, they're getting some coaching on that to help them with that. Because it really is a matter of how the teacher prepares the lessons. So what kind of activities could you do, and how can you best use that activity for delivering your content?
Mm. Does that mean there are no dedicated lessons then, or do you also have a strand?
There are also dedicated lessons,
right.
But dedicated lessons are more to do with the skill, are more to do with the academic discipline. So that's then different things. But the behavior type is exclusively taught within the kind of activities that are being delivered in a classroom, in lesson. And it's, of course, a fallacy to believe that every subject area and every lesson lends itself to these kind of activities. It's like when you are a teacher, you won't do the same kind of activities with your class in every lesson. But throughout a week, we have discovered all essential leadership skill or leadership behaviors can be emulated or can be drilled by using the kind of activities that we've created in the various subjects at least once or twice. So every child will get a fair diet of that through the medium of different subjects throughout the week. And therefore, especially the younger ones wouldn't even know that they are learning leadership skills. Leadership behaviors. They wouldn't know that, and we wouldn't tell them either.
Well, that was actually my next question, was how, and obviously I appreciate for younger learners, it would probably be a little bit too much maybe to sort of add on, but maybe for the older learners, you know, how explicit is this? Because I guess if you're going into a lesson, which is, again, maybe you tell me a bit about that afterwards, like, you know, literally, is it that today's lesson on leadership is X, but the rest of the time, is it more, it's meant to be more sort of just weaved in as natural. It's not going to, right, this component is about this.
Absolutely. It's completely woven in. So in fact, I prefer it when it doesn't quite work with all teachers, but I prefer it when the students are not being told. Mm. Because we're doing it in the classroom, woven into the academic curriculum is the leadership behavior. It is not the leadership skill. It is not the leadership as a discipline, as academic. There are extra lessons for that. But the behavior is being learned like that. So some teachers say it, some don't. Sometimes when the coach is there, the children, if they're a bit older, if they're, you know, grade 7 or grade 8, grade 9, they guess it, and that's fine then, and that's okay. So I don't mind either way, but I don't think it's necessary to tell them that this is a leadership behavior that you're learning here.
Mm. And so what are some of these behaviors then? Are these the things that you sort of came up with alongside that team you brought in, the HBL
yes,
team?
Or? They're actually behaviors that we distilled from the CMI course, from the Chartered Management Institute courses for leadership. I'll just give you an idea of some. And some teachers might say, well, actually, I do this anyway. And that's true. Mm. You do, but it's a bit like high-performance learning. You see, there are, and sorry to make that connection again, but it's really where the idea comes from. There are teachers out there in the world that could easily be teachers in high-performance learning schools because they've been doing all these things all day, every day, their academic careers. And that's no problem. But what makes a high-performance learning school is that everybody does it all the time to all students in all activities throughout the day. And that makes the difference. And that we're doing here. So some of the activities that I'm now telling you, which is, of course, yes, which is the teamwork, yes, which is the having a constructed argument, a discussion whereby you are not only discussing something, but where you're being told to come up with an argument and the other to defend it or to counteract it. Some teachers might say, I do that every day. That's fine. That's okay. But this is a structured approach whereby every teacher is doing at some stage throughout the week. And that makes and that makes the difference. There's analytical work, sort of analytical thinking, which can be done through chess in all sorts of ways, and especially in the sciences and in maths. That's how analyzing data, how to interpret data, and that could be at a very low level. You know, you can. It's I'm surprised myself to what intensity analyzing data on the basis of colors could be done even in year one, in grade one. It's quite extraordinary. But these are all leadership behaviors on how. But the basic leadership behavior is one of consensus. How to find a consensus. And actually, leaders find that quite difficult. And when you find you, we've all met leaders who've done leadership courses, who've got leadership qualifications, and when it comes to reality, they're not good leaders. And often when you look at the detail, what can't they do? It's the consensus finding that they can't often do. So a lot of what these leadership activities are coming at the lowest of level, even from kindergarten, is all about having a disagreement and founding a consensus over you're giving in to a little bit in order to to have an outcome for the greater good.
Do you think that's an example of what we touched on earlier, which is like modern leadership and where leadership's going, and that consensus building is much more of a modern idea, whereas maybe, you know, a few decades ago, a leader was meant to be someone who just said, this is what we're doing and you better get on board, whereas that's not really how things work anymore. And you made a real sort of focus point for that. It's like, number, you just said, it's sort of one of the most fundamental things. So that's quite interesting sort of, I mean, and again, I've heard that from a lot of people, that consensus building is key, right? I think that's quite a modern democratic approach almost to leadership.
Absolutely. And what is also key is the communication skills. And don't forget, I'm tabling this down to kindergarten all the way up to, and then driving it up all the way to the upper sixth form, to grade 12. Your language skills and the language precision is also very important. And children have to learn this. And that actually indirectly improves their English skills. And it improves their motivation to learn English well. Mm. Because the ability to, especially when you're arguing a point, to be precise in your argument and to be precise in your choice of words is actually very important. Children have to learn this from a very early stage. That is, any odd word won't do. It needs to be the word that makes the difference. And that can be scaled down all the way to kindergarten. I always surprise myself when I see it, when I see it in reality, how well this can be done. Coming back to your point, I agree. This is a fundamental feature of 21st century leadership. I mean, nowadays, I've got to say, and I've said it to some of my students, I can go around here and say, well, I'm the director general and you have to respect me for that. Well, they will just end up laughing at me. They won't. That is not, even here in Saudi, that is not how society works. Whatever your title is, respect needs to be earned. Mm. While in the 60s, it's true. If you were the director general in the 60s, that alone, whatever you did, even if it was nothing, was a guarantee for respect from everyone. And that, of course, became with that, that was true because of a negative way of looking at leadership, because there was a, you know, potential sanction, a punishment, or whatever repercussion there might have been had you not revered that person. And that's simply democratic principles don't allow that, because that's, you know, just simply by not respecting somebody, that's not a reason for sacking somebody. That's not a reason. You know, these days that's, and that will even, and I'm sure I talked about leadership as an academic discipline having an evolution and therefore also the future. And I think as time goes on, that'll be more and more the case, and leadership will become more and more inclusive, and therefore will become more and more distributed. And well-functioning societies nowadays, if you look very detailed at what they do and how it is possible that, for instance, Switzerland works so, in fact, almost scarily efficiently, it is the large and distribution of leadership to the lowest of level. There's nobody working there who hasn't got the responsibility for something, however small it might be, but just being there, receiving instructions, that kind of a job doesn't seem to exist anymore in some of the most efficient countries in the world. So therefore, if we just extrapolate that thought into the future, is most likely for that to disappear completely. So therefore, leadership at different levels will be more and more distributed. And that actually makes sense if we think about it, that our knowledge, we seem to know more and more about smaller and smaller things. So therefore, the amount of knowledge that's there is sort of multiplying at a rate that is unprecedented. And therefore, it is necessary to have a more and more distributed leadership in order for things to be able to be led, because large organizations will in the future be even larger, because there's so much more detail to be considered that it is impossible for one at the very top to know all of this. I mean, I already know here, I've got so much to deal with on a daily basis. It is literally impossible for me to know everything about everything that's going on. That's the case in most schools. So schools already rely very much on distributed leadership, which actually goes all the way down to the students. I mean, I would be mortified if my students here felt that they had no role to play in the leading of the school. We are asking them literally about anything, about everything, you know, every big decision they are involved in, and that's the case in many schools nowadays.
Yes, so and that would certainly sort of seem to then also, you know, complement the whole overarching ethos of developing leaders, right? That you would sort of want them to be involved, because it would seem at odds with what you're describing if you then didn't consult them or something, just doing it all yourself top down. A last question then on this side, and you have touched on this, but I just wanted to maybe sort of go into a little bit more detail and then maybe ask some more on the other side of the work you do. But with the teachers then, bringing this into their lessons, you said they get a bit of help with coaching and so forth, but presumably there was a point where you had to sort of have a sort of, you know, all staff meeting or something, will sort of outline this as a sort of, look, this is what we're going to do. And it's going to go beyond just delivering great lessons. You're going to have to deliver great lessons and integrate this into, you know, as part of a, you know, strategy like this. So how was that done? Did you have an all staff meeting? Was it sort of department by department? I mean, how would you actually go about telling your teachers? And again, I don't know how new the school is in terms of how long some of them have been there to sort of have to suddenly think about this. Because that seems like a lot of extra work. And I can imagine people who come to your school probably are kind of quite keen on that kind of stuff. They're not going to, they don't expect to do quite forward thinking teaching, but similarly, you still want to sort of explain it to them, prepare them for it. So how did you do all that?
Well, a very interesting question. And we are, as I said at the beginning, we're founded by Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi. We are an exceptionally well endowed school, I've got to say. We do have not only a campus that is unprecedented in the world, but we also have facilities and with it possibilities that others can't easily have, but all of which could be scaled down. One big advantage, coming back to your question, of course, there was a staff meeting. Of course, staff were on board. They were already on board because it was part of the development plan, it was part of the strategic plan. They knew already that this was coming. And there were staff meetings and there were departmental meetings. There are meetings within the schools because we have a boys' school, we have a girls' school, and they have subsections. There's a, you know, we have a junior school, then the boys and girls' school have an upper primary, then a middle school and a senior school. So within those schools, that was already discussed and we were mentally prepared. But we also are quite privileged because we have an exceptionally vibrant and well-staffed teacher training academy in the school. We have a director of the academy who does a lot of that kind of work to make sure, you know, the same with high performance learning, you know, that needs regular training. All our teachers, for instance, have 2 hours every week for training in the academy, and that's part of the timetable. So 2 hours are timetabled for every teacher a week where they have to be in the academy. They can decide on their courses. Some courses are compulsory, like for instance, high performance learning. That's compulsory because of the leadership part of the deconstructed leadership, as we call it. That's compulsory. And so they get regular top-ups. But there was, of course, an input to begin with. And that was mainly done through the academy, but the academy also uses our own teachers. So those who are excelling in that and have got a particular interest in that and who are really doing well at that and coming up with great ideas on that, they are then being used as the teachers within the academy, teaching their own colleagues. But we've also, and that's coming back to us being, you know, having possibilities, we're also using the inspirational development group because there is something to regain for them because they really like the idea a lot. They thought, well, this really has legs. Nobody's ever come up with that idea. We've both employed together this researcher to do the, you know, the empirical research to back it up with. And they are doing some of the coaching as well. So they are, you know, for some of the teachers who want it, the inspiration leadership group have some staff here, and they can go into lessons and support. Yes, but it's mainly done by our academy and by our teachers. Yes, but it's regular. It was not only once, and now get on with it. There's regular, and they're using their 2 hours of training that they have every week.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's very interesting because, like, I can see how you're, like you just said at the start, that the resources you have available and the sort of timetable option you have there is perhaps not going to be applicable to all schools, certainly perhaps even in the international scene. But you sort of said things could be scaled down, and there may be ways that, you know, even if you're in a sort of slightly different setting, you could consider this and make it work on your level. But overall, yes, you can see why that focus on training and upskilling and it being an ongoing thing is so important. And the other thing I wanted to ask then, actually, I'm going to ask a follow-up question on what you just said there before I go into the other thing, is this research you're talking about, the empirical research of what you're doing, that's very interesting then. So I suppose that's sort of to help sort of give you a proof point about what you're doing is working or might show, which I guess you would hope it wouldn't maybe, but obviously it would help you at least refine it, but that it's not working or having quite the impact you would hope maybe. Is that something you'd be able to share? Like, would you share that with the education generally as a sort of concept? Is that a plan, or is that something you'd have to think about down the line? Because that sounds like, you know, you're going to have this body of insight and knowledge onto how you can potentially teach these leadership skills could be quite impactful for the wider sector.
Absolutely. And that is the only point we're doing it. We're spending quite a lot of money on the researcher. And to be honest, I would have loved to have done that research myself, but you really need to have your mind needs to be in that rather than having to run this. And that wasn't the point. We're getting regular feedback, so I know how the empirical data is shaping up. I interviewed the researcher and I said, look, this is not to prove that my hypothesis is right. This is to do to back it up and to reorganize the control group and all of that. And I said, what I want, once we've got the empirical research, which either then as a result proves what we're doing or disproves what we're doing, if it disproves it, we'll make adjustments. Some of it will be right, and if some of it is not quite right, we'll make adjustments according to the outcome of the research, and we'll do in parallel to that, of course, our own re-evaluation every year anyway on how that's worked. And that work will be made available to the public, and I've already, within our academy, we have already decided we are an AS school, the New England Association of Schools and Colleges. We're also a CIS school. We will soon also be a COBIS school, and we really will be sharing that in the wider network through talks at the various conferences and also papers. We're quite prolific. We're writing papers. You know, my senior principal, Jeremy Newton, and I, we're writing papers, but also other staff about, you know, CPD, about SEN, about Arabic and English sort of in a dual system, and what the advantages are, disadvantages are, and how students can benefit their overall learning with the bilingualism and all of these things. So, quite a lot. And that will then continue, and we will write a lot about that. And that will serve several purposes. A, I want to make it known to the outside world, because when I came into education, when I left business to start in education, that was now a long time ago, I always thought of myself as a natural teacher. And I've always loved imparting knowledge and teaching people, adults and students. And for that reason, I've always wanted to improve the education of as many as possible, which I did first in the classroom, then in a department, then in a boarding house, then in a school, and then in many schools. And I do want to pass that knowledge on, because my ultimate raison d'être is to improve education for all. Not only for one school. In fact, to tag on to that phrase, yeah, I just want to say that as well. We are an exceptionally privileged school here, and we know it. But everything I do, I make available to others, particularly to Saudi, which is why, although we teach in English every day, all our students are Saudi, or most of them are Saudis. They speak excellent English, in fact, fluent English. But everything we do, we also make available in Arabic. And that is only for one reason, and that is so that it could be pushed out into Arabic, into Saudi national schools, you know, by a snap of finger, very quickly, without any hassle. And if the Ministry of Education ever decided that's what they want to do, and of course we are a very prominent school, there's nobody here in Saudi who doesn't know us, then that will be done. To be honest, that would give all of us here at Miss Schools a big buzz. We know that we are very privileged, and if there's any chance of us sending that message and giving information and giving research data, research details that we have out for others to benefit from, great. That's really the raison d'etre of who we are.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I think the fact you're going to share that research and obviously the other work you're doing anyway, it sounds really very interesting for other schools. You know, certainly Tez, you know, we'd be interested in when you have that to share and, you know, could potentially write about it and, you know, the learnings and the takeaways and how you put an integrated leadership curriculum together.
You can be sure of that.
Yes, good. That's what we like to hear. That is great. And yeah, as I think develop, genuinely, you know, our audience will be very keen. The last thing I want to ask in some ways is sort of, we touched a little on the sort of weaving into lessons element and how you do that and the sort of, you know, teaching the teachers how to do that kind of thing. But we sort of touched briefly on also on the sort of more sort of practical elements, and that's more in a sort of, I think you sort of said that's in a more definitive, this is lessons on leadership. Is that right? And is that optional? Is that compulsory? What sort of things do they look at? Is that, again, more practical skills of running organizations? You know, what actually happens in that classroom where the teacher's, right, today we're learning about profit and loss sheets, or, you know, how to run a department? You know, what actually is happening in those lessons?
I didn't hear that just now. Is that lessons for students or lessons for staff?
For students. There was sort of a sense that you have these, you know, as part of this, you have definitive lessons on leadership. Absolutely. Where you go into the room. So how is that compulsory or is it optional?
No, that's compulsory.
Yeah.
We were founded as the go-to school for future leaders in Saudi. So we are very popular for that, and often chosen for that for that reason. Mm. Now, the leadership lessons come in different guises. They're woven into the curriculum, but they're also sometimes happening in the extra curriculum, depending on if it's a practical lesson or if it's a theoretical lesson. They do, of course, learn about profit and loss, and they learn about decision-making. Decision-making in complex situations, holding difficult conversations that are not, you know, we always like to have nice conversations that are positive, and some how to turn something negative into something, into a positive outcome. All of these things are being taught, and that's part of the taught curriculum within the leadership strand. Just to explain that a bit more, we have our own diploma. We have the MISC diploma. So students who are leaving MISC schools, having finished grade 12, will receive the MISC diploma, which comes in four quadrants. And only one of the quadrants is academic. And we do IGCSEs and A-levels there. But here, the children also have to do Tahsil in Qudarat, which is a bit like SATs for Saudi universities, just in case many don't want to stay here, but some do. They have to do that. But we also offer SATs for entrance into American university as part of the academic curriculum. But the second quadrant is internships. So that's compulsory here. And an internship is exclusively happening in either grade 9 or in grade 11, which equates to year 10 or year 12. And that is a week's worth of work at a company that the children choose, and they have to do a project on that, which will give them an EPQ, an extended project qualification. It is normally a critique of the company, of a product of it, of their structure, of their marketplace, of whatever it is, and that they get a mentor, and then, of course, they'll be externally assessed, and then there'll be a viva, a bit like a little thesis. So MA. You know, it follows the format of an MA, but for schools. And the third quadrant is the leadership quadrant. And that really is part of it, is happening in lessons anyway. But there is also the other bit, which is the leadership teaching, which is leadership as an academic discipline, but leadership also as a skill. And then there's the outreach as well. So there's leadership camps. They normally happen in the summer holidays. And then, of course, there's leadership here in school, where they're either part of the head boy and head girls teams, part of the prefect's teams, or they lead students' teams, or part of the student council, and all of these kind of things are all leadership opportunities that we also do. And the fourth and last quadrant is the national identity quadrant, but that's not only a national identity. Yes, it is about Arabic. It is about national studies, but it's also about Islamic studies. Now, most of our students are Muslims, but from this academic year, we're also taking in international students. Only 10%, we are not allowed to have more. Only 10%, and they might, of course, not be Muslims. So they will then do chip or comparative religion, whatever it is that they choose in that. And that entire diploma has just been kite marked and vetted by Cambridge. So it'll carry this dual logo of MISC and of Cambridge. And I know from conversations with universities that this very much corresponds to what they're thinking is, because it's molded against the four-year transcript. So that from grade nine, either, you know, from when they start GCSE up until the end of the sixth form, which is grade 12, that we follow their journey and record very accurately what it is that they've done, and that they cover a lot of rubrics that go far beyond the academic studies.
Well, that sounds like a very comprehensive outcome for a pupil, doesn't it? Like what they get at the end to sort of show, yes, you've got the academic, but then you've got all these other things you've done. That's very forward looking, isn't it?
And they do have to have it. I mean, everybody who leaves MISC schools will have the diploma. Mm. The diploma comes either as a distinction diploma, that is then decided upon on the grades, what your academic grades are, or a merit diploma, or just a diploma. But they have to have done all quadrants. So even if you get all A stars in GCSEs and A levels, and if you haven't done, say, an internship, you don't get the diploma. You have your grades, but you don't get the diploma. We will make sure that everybody does get it.
Can I ask as well, I mean, I expect this is the case, but the internships, and I guess, do you ever get in, like, you know, guest speakers and so forth? Because given your position in the society, you must have access to good people. But again, I feel like that's something that, again, would be applicable to other schools, in that you actually, if you reach out, things like internships, things like bringing in people to speak, if you've done that yet, I don't know, but, you know, that's a real benefit, right? You can make a lot of that for students to learn about the world of business, about leadership, seeing people actually in their offices, you know, this is what it's like.
Absolutely. And we we have a speaker circuit. In fact, it's part of our extracurricular program, that students can do Toastmastering, students can be TED Talks, and also we're getting speakers in also to emulate them on, that they can emulate, so they can see, oh, that's, you know, I would quite like to be. Often when students have a propensity for being a speaker, they do need to be presented with good speakers so that they can, if they have a propensity for doing that, they can actually mold themselves on somebody who does this well. Yeah, we've only recently, only last week, had a professor from Stanford here. In April, we have another professor, an environmentalist from Berkeley coming, and from MIT about, he's an astrophysicist. So we do have good speakers coming here for them, both to cover the academic needs of the children, also what their interests might be to read at university, but also generally about leadership. And of course, our parent clientele is really quite some clientele, I've got to say. They're all in very high-level positions, and we use those as well on the speaker circuit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, using that parent community seems like an absolute win. When I can imagine you've got some, like you've just had high-profile people with good insights and stories and experiences to share, so why wouldn't you? But That's fascinating stuff. And I think, you know, I'm conscious of the time and how long we've spoken. And I think that's testament to how interesting this work is and how many sort of avenues it opens up. But I certainly think in terms of really getting a really good insight into what you're doing, why you're doing it, the sort of the journey you have for it, I think that's been really, really interesting. And I know, you know, I talk to lots of international school leaders, and I think this idea of developing future leaders and people that are that can lead future organizations, and not just lead them, but lead them well, or lead them with a kind of sense of purpose and, you know, where is the world going to be, and how do we make sure those people are, you know, have the right sort of mindset for the modern world. I think we had the International Baccalaureate Director General write a piece just recently talking about that, how we need, you know, future leaders who are empathetic and you know, I think even probably even said, I think consensus, able to build consensus, you know, we need that kind of leader. So fascinating to hear about how a school like yours is doing that. And I really appreciate the insights. And I'm sure, like I said, there may be leaders who may hopefully may get in touch with questions or kind of, you know, want to know a bit more. And also sounds like we're going to hear more about it going forward when you start publishing some of the research insights. So really look forward to that as well. But again, for this podcast, thank you so much for all your insights.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.